Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So my first guest this hour is a 24-year-old black man who finds race doesn't matter all that much, at least in his social circles. Justin Britt Gibson lives in the Washington, D.C. area and had an article in Sunday's Washington Post called "What's Wrong with This Picture? Race Isn't a Factor When My Generation Chooses Friends." It's been getting a lot of reaction, including from black women who he says react the most negatively to seeing Justin with his white girlfriend. But how right is he? Is race less of a factor, at least to your social circles, the younger you are? And what are the implications of that, if it's true, for larger social questions, racial justice and things like that? So call us, millennials, Xers, Yers, boomers, anyone, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And hey, Justin, welcome to WNYC.
Morning, Brian. How are you?
I'm okay. And since you're on a New York radio station here, I should mention right away that your article starts with a scene here in New York. Can you describe it?
Yeah, it's actually a scene I kind of witnessed probably, I guess, back in October. I was on the subway. I was working on a documentary in New York City. And we were on the subway, and sitting there, my girl, and her head was on my shoulder, and there was this woman across from me who happened to be African American, and she just gave me this look, and it was a look of disapproval. But I'd like to clarify one thing. Well, first thing, I'm actually 25, and I actually live in Los Angeles right now.
Oh, so I'm sorry for.
Oh, it's okay.
Blowing the facts there.
No, it's fine. But yeah, the woman looked at me, and I kind of had this feeling. It was this eerie feeling, and I felt like, well, is she looking at me because of the Tigers hat I have on, or is it because it's a? I realized it was a bad idea to wear a Detroit Tigers cap.
Who had just beaten the Yankees in the American League playoffs?
Yeah, but the other thing that was on my mind, well, maybe she's looking at me disapprovingly because the girl on my shoulder is white. It just really struck me, and I just thought that would be a good way to start off the article. It was like pretty much a scene from my life. So,
well, the subtitle is very sweeping. Race isn't a factor when my generation chooses friends. How true do you think that is across the board?
Well, I think it depends who you talk to. Personally, I've been fortunate to live in an environment where diversity was always embraced. In Montgomery County, Maryland, where I grew up, Springbrook High School, specifically where I went to school, was a very diverse school. The numbers were it was crazy. The table I sat at, it was like, now that I think about it, in retrospect, it was actually like the United Nations, I had friends from Pakistan, I had friends from Haiti, Ethiopia, I had a friend from Pittsburgh. It was just like, but that never was on our minds. We just kind of looked at each other as friends.
Right. That's why I thought you were from the D.C. area. You did grow up in the D.C. area there in Silver Spring, and it was very diverse.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, it was. And it started as early as, elementary school. I had moved from Los Angeles with my mother, and it was this area outside D.C. called Tacoma Park, and I went to this school called East Silver Spring, and I just remember now I'm remembering that, and just walking in and seeing, just all sorts of cultures in this school, but it was never really an issue for me.
But by contrast, we recently had another young author who's mixed black and white. He had one black parent, one white parent. And when he went to a new school, he found the black kids all sitting together in the lunchroom and the white kids all sitting together in the lunchroom. And he had no choice but to make a choice between them and be judged accordingly. Have you heard stories or witnessed things like that as well?
I have. I've seen that in, I saw that in college, actually. It was interesting. When I went to Temple University, they put a lot of students in this apartment complex off campus because they didn't have enough housing for all the students. And I remember, going down the halls and just deciding, okay, it's time to make some new friends, I had transferred from an art school in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And, it was one of these things where, how when you're in your dorms, you kind of just go by these rooms and there's groups of people kind of chat, and you just kind of say, okay, who am I going to talk to? So I went into this one room, and it happened to be a room, filled with all white kids. And it was one of the first instances in a long time where I did feel like, you know, I felt kind of alienated. I entered the conversation and no one really addressed me. And it was one of these things where I just felt like, well, you know, screw it. I'm going to do my best here. You know what I mean? But once I kind of assimilated myself, everyone, you know, looked at me differently. It was like, you know, I guess, you know, I think it's one of these things you just kind of got to break down the door. You know,
you just used a $1 million word, you know. Assimilate. Once I assimilated myself, some of the people in the audience are going, wait a minute, that's not what we want.
Yeah. No, but I mean, I guess because I've lived in such a, you know, I'm so used to dealing with so many different people, you know, so I guess it's one of these things where I choose to say, okay, you know, if I'm in a group of white people, you know, it's not like I'm going to, like, I guess it's tough because, you know, you act accordingly, you know. And I'm going to talk a certain way with my black friends, and I'm going to talk a certain way with my white friends. That's just how it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So,
and I just kind of, you know, that's what I did. You know?
But I guess one of my questions is, do you think that your experience growing up in Silver Spring and the way things are there and with the rest of the country maybe not being that community, do you think your experience is more representative or more unrepresentative? When you write an article that says, you know, for my generation, race doesn't matter to how we choose our friends.
You know, I think it's funny because after reading all the responses that I've been getting, and it's great because it's very informative. It's one of these things where I kind of go, wow, you know, maybe a lot of stuff hasn't changed. You know, I mean, I've gotten a lot of responses from people in Virginia and even people in, you know, I mean, all over the place, and people saying, hey, no, it's not like that at all for me. I still see a lot of racism, you know, in my area. And I think it probably has a lot to do with Silver Spring. You know, I guess it's just this nice place, you know. I mean, but yeah, I mean, because, you know, I have, you know, some people, I haven't had people in Madrid. Someone in Madrid actually said that, you know, they feel like they're 20 years behind, you know. And that it's going to take a long time for them, you know, for a lot of people there, he felt like, to, you know, really get into this idea of, you know, accepting all.
That's interesting, because I know that some African Americans have the experience of going to Europe and finding it much less racially charged for them as African Americans than they find life here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, including myself. I mean, in the article, I talk about my experience in Rome and how I just felt, I mean, I never really encountered any kind of prejudice, you know, and race was never really even brought up. I mean, among my friends, it was just never a factor, and all the people I was hanging out with were white Italians, so.
As long as you're not a Moroccan immigrant to Paris.
Right, exactly.
My guest on WNYC is Justin Britt Gibson, freelance writer and author of the Washington Post article on Sunday, What's Wrong with This Picture? Race Isn't a Factor When My Generation Chooses Friends is the subtitle. We have a ton of phone calls here for you. And so here's someone else who grew up in Silver Spring, and it's T. T, you're on WNYC.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to speak to your caller. I grew up in Silver Spring. Also, I went to Paint Branch High School, and basically, I'm African American also, and I'm a little bit older. I'm in my mid-30s, and I just want to let the caller know that I think with a little more life experience, he's going to realize that what he's talking about is more a socioeconomic factor that he's discounting. So if he grew up in a different socioeconomic background, he might not be able to relate to his friends the way that he thinks. And even though for him personally race might not be a factor, in the rest of society it is. And I think when he gets more life experience, he'll realize the choice isn't always his.
Justin?
Yes, thanks for calling. Actually, I wanted to comment on that. It's one of the things I actually bring up in my article is how I think the socioeconomic factor is a huge factor these days, especially when you're dealing with race. I mean, I live in a black neighborhood right now in Los Angeles, and it's not the best neighborhood, but I'm definitely learning that it really does depend on, you know, your socioeconomic upbringing. I mean, there's a lot of poor kids around here, and they don't have the lifestyle that I have. I realize that I came from a middle-class upbringing, And it is a lot different, you know, when you're dealing with that. And I even mentioned a friend of mine, Barry Canty, who lived in, who came from North Carolina, who had a similar experience. And he actually shined a light on that and basically said that, you know, he had a lot of friends who had said, oh, how do you, his black friends in high school especially, who said they came from more poor backgrounds and said, oh, how do you talk with the white kids or Hispanic kids? And Barry basically basically connected it to the fact that he, you know, grew up in a middle-class neighborhood. So it was different, and he thinks that is the problem, and I agree.
T, thanks a lot. Ashley in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ashley.
Hi, how are you?
All right.
I grew up in North Carolina as well, and I moved to New York 2 years ago. And growing up in North Carolina, most of my friends were white. I'm white. I'm 25.
Mm-hmm.
My college was 1% minority. I went to Wake Forest University. And then I moved to New York 2 years ago, and I suddenly have friends of every race, ethnicity, like a whole diverse range of people that I'm friends with. And I think obviously it's because the environment has changed. So I think that the environment, the people that you are around, gives you more choices, obviously. Like, maybe our choices aren't made because of personal decisions, but because of the options we're presented with.
So the generational factor might also come into play here, because I wonder if your parents, and of course I don't know who your parents are or what they're like, but if your parents at their age suddenly upped and moved to New York, it might not be so easy for them to make friends of all kinds of races, do you think?
True. I think that's definitely true to a certain extent. When my parents came up for my wedding last summer, it was really interesting to see them interacting with a totally different environment as far as people and everything else.
Because the guests at your wedding were diverse?
Yes, absolutely.
And so what was that like for them?
Well, it wasn't uncomfortable. I mean, we do have family friends that are mostly black. I mean, as far as ethnicity goes, that's the diversity we have, is black and white in our family friends. But so they weren't necessarily uncomfortable, but mm-hmm. it was a new experience, mm-hmm. and I could sort of see it sinking in slowly.
Mm-hmm. Justin, any reaction to Ashley?
I do. I'm so glad she actually brought that up. A really, really good friend of mine, his girlfriend's sister, just got married, and she's, I believe, of Hawaiian and Japanese descent. And she, at their wedding, which was in, I believe it was somewhere in Hawaii, and the guests were Hawaiian and Japanese, and even a lot of them were white. And he said what was so interesting about that experience was that everyone accepted everyone else, and people were chanting, and, you know, they were saying bonsai, and then you would hear people in the audience, you know, chanting in their Hawaiian dialect, and then you had the white people, and it was just one of these things where he realized that, like, even though we're all different, it's okay for everyone to embrace their own culture.
Ashley, thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
We will continue in a minute with my guest, Justin Britt Gibson, a freelance writer and author of the Washington Post article, What's Wrong with This Picture? We have a lot more of your calls to talk about your experience, more people from different races, different generations. And I want to ask you when we come back, Justin, if you think the media is kind of missing the experience that you and others from your generation, you say, are having, because we always hear about racial conflict, old style, it seems to me, in the mainstream press. So stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Justin Britt Gibson, freelance writer from L.A. these days, grew up in the Silver Spring, Maryland, D.C. area, as we were talking about, and wrote an article in the Washington Post on Sunday called What's Wrong with This Picture? Race Isn't a Factor When My Generation Chooses Friends. He's 25 years old. The article starts with a scene on a subway in Manhattan where he's out with his white girlfriend, and people have various reactions. And we're taking your phone calls from you of different groups and different age groups to see if this is in your experience. Race isn't a factor when younger Americans choose friends more than when older Americans choose friends? What do you think? 212-433-WNYC or email Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC at WNYC.org. You write in your article about that horrible racist rant by a guy named Kenneth Eng in Asian Week magazine. He actually got an article published there called Why I Hate Blacks. And he looks to be about your age from a website I was looking on about that with his picture. Does his existence, and for that matter, his magazine's willingness to print that article in the mainstream press disprove your theory?
Not necessarily. I think, what I found, what struck me about the article, and I've even, I think if you go on YouTube, you can see an interview with him. I mean, I think he's getting a lot of attention, and I think a lot of people, you know, I think that at the end of the day, that sells, you know. I mean, if you're fervent about your beliefs and it, you know, it goes against what a lot of other people believe, I think a lot of people, they just want to, that's what sells. It sells, you know, and people were watching. I watched, you know. And
well, it's also just sensational, not just to go against other people's beliefs, but to come out with that blatant kind of hate speech and have it published in a magazine that takes itself seriously. I mean, I think, you know, one of the problems with that whole incident is not that some guy, I mean, you know, David Duke's out there and all kinds of people who hate black people or hate Asian people or whatever are out there, but they don't get the imprimatur of major national magazines printing their stuff. And for some reason, Asian Week, which has since apologized, put this in as just another point of view.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my question was to begin with why it even got published. I guess, you know, when I had read it, I like I said in the article, I felt like, well, he has a right to say what he wants to say. And I really think it's just about his experiences, you know, a lot like mine. You know, he's going to have a different experience. And I guess he had, you know, basically constructed his beliefs through his experience at NYU, where he felt like, you know, a lot of black kids had treated him, you know, with a lot of prejudice. And that's unfortunate. And, yeah, I mean, that's the reality, is there is a lot of prejudice out there. But you have experiences like mine where I don't see a lot of prejudice. And thankfully, you know, I think we're heading in the right direction. I think there's a lot to be said for what's going on right now. I'm just saying, I mean, when you look out there and you see, you know, the areas, and I'm living in an urban environment like Los Angeles or being in New York. I mean, it's a lot different out than other places. But I think things are changing for the better. And you know, I'm not saying it's ever going to go away. I think prejudice will always be out there in some form or another, but it's important. I thought it was important to acknowledge that, you know, there are people like me out there who have a different experience.
Lenore in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lenore.
Good morning. I had a very similar experience as a caller. I grew up, my father was in the military. I spent half my life overseas, mm-hmm. living in Japan, Taiwan, and Europe and Germany, and where there are a lot of interracial marriages, and so with that, there is a huge sense of accepting people for who they are and not making a distinction between being black, Korean, Asian, European, or whatever. It was just that you were only an American. When we arrived in a city, all the people would come and bring us food, invite us to dinner, so you invite us to culture. And my father wound up getting stationed stateside for our very first time stateside, which was in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And I wind up going to a public school, not being in a Department of Defense-dependent school. Mm-hmm. Very different. On the left-hand side, the black kids would sit. On the right-hand side, the white kids would be there. I walked in, and I didn't know which way to go, not because I didn't have a sense of identity of being black, but because being overseas, everyone did everything together. There was never a segregation. So I didn't eat lunch in the lunchroom. I wound up just getting involved in various different activities and became a president of a statewide organization and then traveled all over North Carolina to speak at various different high schools where I would be sometimes the only black that had ever been in that school or person of African descent. And I never felt uncomfortable because I didn't know to feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
When I then went to North Carolina State University, there was an African-American orientation, which we came a day before the rest of the kids of the majority. And it was very affirming. They would say, you earned your right to be here, which I didn't know growing up that black people were considered, or people of African descent were considered to be inferior.
That's so interesting. You grew up in this military bubble, and suddenly you were back in America and in the South.
Yes, back in America and the South. I grew up almost kind of utopian. I didn't even know a lot of the slang words that people would use to talk about other different cultures until I was in my mid-20s, because it wasn't even part even of my family background. And so I, going into then going and working in the big four firms, where by then I'm the only person in my actual group, I got this awareness, I think, of being kind of like the only black going to a primarily all-white institution, like I said, North Carolina State. And to me, it was kind of detrimental overall, because then I'm making myself more so, I guess, aware of being different.
Right. And so you're suddenly finding yourself with this kind of distance, or looking at some other people as other in a way you never did before.
Exactly. And actually kind of even classifying them, and actually even looking at interracial marriage differently. Like before being in a military environment, you never even take a second look at an interracial.
That's so interesting. Justin, anything to say to Lenore?
Yeah, I mean, I think first of all, I had no idea that there was like that overseas, especially like in Japan and stuff. And that's really good to hear. I think that it's one of those things you have.
It doesn't necessarily affirm your theory that things are getting better as people get younger, because there's a 35-year-old who had the experience of non-racialism until she was back in the United States among her peers. But it's another fascinating experience from another perspective. Lenore, thank you very much. And Sheila in New Rochelle, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sheila.
Oh, hi. I've called before. You can probably hear from my accent. I'm actually, in fact, English and a Londoner, and a half Indian, and of a sort of actually Persian, Russian, Indian, and English, precisely. Born in Africa, raised in Paris and in London, and being a foreign correspondent. But I always knew that New York did not like interracial marriages. And I've always seen that people really need to know what you are. They always ask what you are, and then they have a sort of mental hierarchy that they slot you into.
You find that more to be the case in New York than in London, you're saying?
Absolutely. We are truly and practically and literally a melting pot. It's just a phrase here, I'm afraid. There are lots of different races who live in the same city, but they do tend to live separately and do tend to live and think separately. Now, my experience is that I was brought here by my white English husband in 1992 with two small children in Westchester, which, of course, is not Manhattan. I realize that. And still with the country clubs, and even though they may use the word diversity 15 times in one sentence, doesn't mean they've got an open mind. And I have discovered how incredibly narrow-minded and racist people are in the schools, in the city hall.
Sheila, let me jump in and ask you the generational question, because now your kids must be, what, high school or college age?
Well, that's another story. We came in with babies. It was supposed to be temporarily.
So you're, part English, part Persian, part Russian, part Indian babies are now high school students or whatever, and are they having the same kind of segregated experience that you're describing?
Well, this is interesting. When they were little, they were both blonde, so when I opened the door, they assumed I was the housekeeper, and if not, why not? And now that my daughter is still paler than my son, in the Mamaroneck school system, they were given two different ethnic codes. I didn't know what the numbers were. She was considered to be a 10 white non-Hispanic, and he was considered to be some other number, Pacific Islander, which I found very offensive. We don't do this in England. My son has suffered bullying on several occasions in several schools.
Right. So I'm going to leave it there, Sheila. But so there's another story from another perspective of how it ain't over. But let's go right on to Stephen Suffolk. You're on WNYC. Hi, Stephen.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Thank you. I agree with Justin. I think things are getting better. I'm recently engaged. I'm a white Jewish attorney from Long Island, but although I don't refer to myself that way. And I'm engaged to a woman who's of color is black. She's from Trinidad, and she's Catholic, although I don't refer to her that way. We're in our 30s. The only problem we face are people who are telling us we are having problems or will face problems. But the fact of the matter is most of our friends and colleagues are all of different religions, all of different colors, and we have no problems with that.
Well, that's great. Anything you want to say, Justin?
Well, I want to say congratulations on the engagement. And
There you go. Bringing it back to the personal. From me too, Stephen, now that Justin brought me back to Earth. Congratulations on your engagement.
Thank you. It's one of those things where, I have friends who face similar situations where people will say, hey, you got to be careful out there. People aren't going to look at you. I mean, I have a friend of mine who's got married, and he's to a black woman, and he's white, and he's told me that a few times in his life he's seen a little animosity from black men. But for the most part, this is another example where it was like, his wedding went great, and his friends are mostly black, which is really interesting, and they never say anything about his situation, and it never feels like there's any anger towards that union. Mm-hmm. And the same goes for me. I just I don't have anybody, thankfully, and I do get looks every once in a while. I think that just comes with the territory. But it's something you just kind of say, they see it differently than I do. I think I look at somebody like my girl and I say, I just like this person. Yeah. I don't look at this person and go, this is a white girl. I just see this as that's my girl,
Right. Stephen, thank you for your call. Justin, you did mention to us off the air that you've had the strongest negative reactions to your article and to that, for that matter, to the fact that you have a white girlfriend from black women. Talk about that a little bit and tell us your understanding of it.
Well, my understanding is, it's interesting because after the article came out, I got an email from a black woman who said, before I read your article, I really hated seeing black men with white women. But once I read your article, I saw it a little differently, and I wanted to, just wish you the best and, with you and your girl. And basically it was one of these things where you'll hear a lot of black guys probably say this, that they've been in situations where they'll just get these mean looks from, they call it the look, and it's this thing where you're walking down the street, you're holding their hands, and if you see a black woman, she gives you this look like he's a traitor, or white women will say when they're with a black man that a lot of girls will say, stay away from our men. We need them, and you get your own, So, it's out there, but,
Do you relate to it at all, especially, as you look around and see some of the socioeconomic realities in America today? There's a shortage of, what by traditional standards would be considered marriageable black men who are making as much money as the black women, who are as educated as black women, et cetera, et cetera.
I would, unfortunately the numbers, speak for themselves. So many of us are incarcerated, and there's a lot of us that are unemployed, and I guess there's this feeling, and I can see where black women's coming from. I think we live in a society where, black women are also just, unfortunately, they're not, their beauty isn't as celebrated. You look at magazines, and they're just riddled with mostly like white models, And so, I wonder if there's this stigma, and I think it's important that, and that's not to say that I strictly date white women. I date all kinds of women, and I've had Asian girls, I have black girlfriends, and it's just one of those things. I never looked at a girl for her color. I looked for who they were,
Sophia in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sophia.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I love the show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to, first of all, point out that I'm a black woman and I dated a white man, and I had the same reaction from black men all the time. So just to say that, just to put that out there. But I had a similar background growing up in California in a very diverse school, very diverse environment. But I always found that sometimes around my white friends being looked at as a token, or sometimes you hear remarks that are unfavorable and you have to correct people. And I just wondered what Justin had to say about ever feeling like that when, he talked about assimilating when he got to college, and these white guys in this room were kind of not very welcoming at first, but then they were all fine. And after that experience, did you feel like now I'm cool with these guys, or did you feel like a token, or did you feel like they weren't really listening to you? Or did you ever have to correct somebody when they said something that was unfavorable? Yeah.
And Justin, we have a minute left, and then we're going to go and get some breaking news from the presidential campaign. So, Justin, one last answer to Sophia.
I never felt like a token, but I've had experiences with, you know, when I've hung out with white people where, you know, a white friend might say, oh, you know, you're so articulate or whatever. And it was kind of like, well, what is that supposed to mean? You know, I mean, you know, because I've never heard a white person say another white person, you know, and, you know, amongst friends, oh, you're so articulate. And I was, and it really kind of offended me because I felt like, well, what is that? So it gave them like this kind of feeling like, oh, you're, you know, because you're black, you're not expected to speak the way you speak. And so I have experienced that. And I also experienced from the other side where I've had black people say, why do you talk white? Because, you know, the way I speak, it's just how my grandmother told me to speak, you know, and she always corrected me when I, you know, when I spoke another way. So, you know, it's interesting, you know. I mean, I think that you have to just kind of, I never looked at it as a token situation, though, when I was amongst white friends, and that's interesting. I never thought of it that way, but that's something to think about, you know.
Justin Britt Gibson is a freelance writer in L.A. and author of an op-ed in the Washington Post on Sunday called What's Wrong with This Picture? Race Isn't a Factor When My Generation Chooses Friends. Sophia, thank you for your call. Justin, thank you for your article and for your time today. We really, really appreciate it. Good conversation.
Thank you, Brian.